From the little book titled Universal Sufism, The Path of Breath, Prayer, and Zikr. Hazrat Anayat Khan teaches, breath in Sufic term is called nafaz. The breath spreads through the whole body like a tree, and its stem is felt by man. And it is this stem which man in his everyday language calls breath. All the branches of this tree the mystic calls by different names. All the branches of this tree the mystic calls by different names. A mystic sees the whole body as a plant of the breath. Therefore, in Sanskrit language, breath is called prana, which means the very life. It spreads life and magnetism in all parts of the body, for breath in itself is life and is magnetism. Breath is itself life and magnetism. In other teachings, Hazrat Anayat Khan talks about the practice of fikr, which is putting on the swing of the breath a concentration, an inner phrase that syncs up with the breath. And so to begin this session, let's think of this, that we are a plant, and to the ordinary it is called a body, but that there are all these different subtle parts of the being, all the way from the physical to the etheric, that can be touched by the life and magnetism of breath. And there are some very beautiful phrases in the prayers of Anayat Khan. And we can use these phrases on the swing of the breath. So we'll use one phrase as we breathe in, then we'll for just a moment hold the breath while we concentrate on the second phrase, and we'll exhale as we concentrate on the third phrase. I'll say the phrases a few times and then just fall into your own natural rhythm of inhalation, holding, and exhalation while holding on the swing of the breath these phrases. Breathing in, pour upon us thy love and thy light, and hold, disclose to us thy divine might, and exhale, use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth. And you can personalize the phrases, so while breathing in, pour upon me thy love and thy light, and hold, disclose to me thy divine light, and breathe out, use me for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth. In, pour upon me thy love and thy light. Hold, disclose to me thy divine light, and breathe out, use me for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth. In, pour upon me thy love and thy light. Hold, disclose to me thy divine light. And breathe out, use me for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth. Just continue silently on the breath. Phrase, pour upon me thy love and thy light. We open up to this divine light which is always streaming forth, always pouring forth. We tune to that vibration. We drink it up as if drinking precious drops. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. We let that light penetrate deep into our being, identifying and syncing up with that light, that spark within us. Disclose to me thy divine light. Feeling the presence of that spark, that light within, and then breathing out. Use me for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth. Not my will, not my thought. Thy wisdom chooseth. In a supplementary paper called Class for Murids, number 6, The Philosophy of Breath, Hazrat Inayat Khan says, if a person wishes to study the self, to know the self, what is important is not the study of the mind, of the thought, the imagination, nor the study of the body, but the study of the breath. The breath has made the mind and the body for its expression. It is made all from the vibration to the physical atom, from the finest to the grossest. The breath, the change of the breath can make us sad in the midst of happiness. It can make us joyful in the saddest, the most miserable. If a person wishes to study the self, to know the self, what is important is not the study of the mind, the thought, the imagination, nor of the body, but the study of the breath. The breath has made the mind and the body for its expression. It has made all from the vibration to the physical atom, from the finest to the grossest. From the gathas. This is the third gatha on Pasi Anfa's breath, number 10. The breath penetrates, breath permeates, breath strikes. Breath absorbs, breath invigorates, and breath heals. It is therefore that souls with great power make their thought and feeling penetrate into the mind and the hearts of others. As breath creates an atmosphere, it permeates the bodies of others, also the sphere, charging the whole atmosphere with its particular magnetism. The hearts of men are likened to gongs in temples. Every spoken word strikes them, but the power of breath, one strikes them without a word. It is by the breath that one contracts illness, but also one absorbs defects and depression of others, as well as of joy and happiness. The breath of personalities healthy in mind and body is vitalizing. The breath of spiritual beings whose love and sympathy goes out to others is naturally healing. Then hearts of men are likened to gongs in the temple. Every spoken word strikes them, but by the power of the breath, one strikes them without a word. It is by the breath that one contracts illnesses, but also one absorbs defects and depressions of others, as well as joy and happiness. The breath of personalities healthy in mind and body is vitalizing. The breath of the spiritual beings who love and sympathy goes out to others is naturally healing. And this again ties into the previous reading from the supplementary papers. If a person wishes to study the self, to know the self, what is important is not the study of the mind, of the thought, the imagination, or of the body, but the study of the breath. And in this way, we can understand then how we may be either sending or receiving impressions. Are we radiating or are we absorbing? Here Mersha teaches in the gathas that every word strikes the hearts of men, but the power of the breath does even more without a word. And he also says that we can contract all illness from breathing in from others that are ill. But he also says that we can absorb depression and joy and happiness. If we can't know ourselves, if we can't know our own vibrations, and it is so, we don't know anything. And I assure you, it is not feeding the information in the mind that is the greatest shield It's the breath, and it's understanding oneself. And here we have to be very honest with ourselves. You see, if we're not, then how can we know ourselves? And Murshid tells us in that teaching, in the classes for new reads, that it's one of the greatest blessings is to know oneself. And back to the teaching on the gathas, again, number 10, the mystery of breath. The last few sentences say, it is no exaggeration that the whole phenomena of life has breath as its mystery. And once the knowledge of breath is attained, and breath is mastered by practice, one beholds the most wonderful phenomena within and without. There are many who remain skeptical till they have fathomed the mystery of breath. Once they know it, they call it, as Hindus have called it for ages, breath life. Breath life. So the first sentence of this teaching says, breath penetrates, breath permeates, breath strikes, breath absorbs, breath invigorates, and breath heals. So just taking, we can take a few of those as a concentration. So as we breathe in, we began the class with the phrases, pour upon us thy light, thy love and thy light, disclose to us thy divine life, use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth. But here it says, breath penetrates. So take just one of those phrases, perhaps, or one concept of life and light, and let it become a living reality, no longer a concept. But let that be absorbed through the breath, penetrating every part of the being. Use the breath to penetrate. Penetrate each cell, each molecule. And one could even work with these in tandem. For example, absorbing something that one wishes to infuse one's being with. So one could be breathing in peace or joy or love or confidence or mastery or whatever that vibration is, tuning oneself to that through the breath, because this is how everything is done, is through the breath. It's like a life current that connects everything to everything else. And so, tuning to that vibration, one can absorb it, Murshid says, penetrating, permeating, absorbing. And so, breathe in that quality and allow it to penetrate deep into the being. And one can thus assess what that is in the moment by looking what the greatest challenge is in this moment. If the challenge is fear, then absorb confidence or courage. If the challenge is not feeling loved, then of course breathe in love. If the feeling is some sort of conflict, breathe in compassion for self and other. If one is obscured in some way, breathe in insight and let it penetrate the being. this point, are there any questions on the teachings thus far for today, or any comments, any sharing that anyone would like to contribute?
Well, I thank you for the emphasis of absorbing what you need.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times we spend a lot of time deflecting what we don't want. And of course, when we're putting ourselves, when we catalyze things like that, then it's always a bit of a tug of war. Mm-hmm. I mean, the vibrations are all there. It's a matter of tuning. One can't avoid them. Nor one should. Mm-hmm. Did that sound right? Was that correct? Did that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I keep thinking, you know, right in the moment, it's that prayer of St. Francis of Assisi comes up, you know, where he says, where there's injury, pardon. Where there's hatred, let me so love. You know, ask that I not so much ask to be loved as to love. Could you feel it? Could you feel it? Could you feel the drawing in and being able to send it into your being?
I was just having a thought about the experience of having done these as individual phrases and not having done them as a group put together. So there's like a beginning and a closure in doing those as a group. When doing them throughout the day separately, I've never made that connection really before. And that's kind of a beautiful practice to put on inhalation and exhalation. So thank you. There's a different vibration to that.
Yeah. And the actual affirmation for the noonday prayer, of course, is may the message of God reach far and wide. But and those can be done all differently, in like guide me. I love the one, guide me on the path of thine own goodness. You know, I do that one sometimes as well, and I'll share that where it's first is disclosed to me thy divine light. Use me for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth, and breathing out, guide me on the path of thine own goodness. You know, like each line of those prayers, that's why I'm always emphasizing really studying the prayers, because each line is a teaching. And people often over want to look those prayers, but they're very beautiful meditations. Each line is a meditation, you know. Anything else?
Annalena, we
yes.
felt this deeply.
I'm sorry?
We felt this deeply.
We're really very happy. And this is a caveat just for Alima Nalima. Will you write me a note, please, and remind me there is a friend of ours that has relocated in the Boston area and would like to connect with you. And maybe you could start a study group, just even if it's the three of you.
Wonderful.
So I'm reading from The Mysticism of Sound by Hazard Knight Kahn. And what I hope that we can start to see from these teachings, from the subtlety of the breath, and from these indications that Murshid gives us from the mysticism of sound, is that things are not as they appear. It's a matter of vibration, and it's a matter of what vibrations we're tuning to. And here Murshid says, all things and beings in the universe are connected with each other, visibly or invisibly. And through vibrations, a communication is established between them on all the planes of existence. As an ordinary instance, if a person coughs in an assembly, many others begin to do the same. And the same is the case with yawning. This also applies to laughter, excitement, and depression. This shows that vibrations convey the condition of one being to another. In this way, the seer knows the past, present, and future, and perceives conditions on all planes of existence. Vibrations work through the cord of sympathy existing between us and our surroundings and reveal past, present, and future conditions. Vibrations work through the cord of sympathy existing between us and our surroundings. Gives a new meaning to the word sympathy. Sympathetic vibration. Quote from Murshid's book called The Flower Garden of an Icon, and it's a little reading about this. The ears of whose heart have listened to the Word of God have first accomplished stillness in their life. And what an atmosphere such a person can produce, what effect their presence has. It is more than healing, more than medicine. A man with a perfectly stilled and comforted and rested mind will at once raise up another who is going through distress or restlessness or pains or ill temper or worry or anxiety. The very presence of one whose mind is still gives such hope, such inspiration, such sympathy, such power and light. All the heavenly properties run so smoothly and freely from the person whose mind is stilled that his words, his voice, his presence all react upon the minds of others. And as he stills his mind, so his very presence becomes healing. What do you think that means for us?
Well, what were we talking about last night about that finding spiritual friend or teacher? That influences that one being who is calm and serene, influences many people who may also become calm and serene, and so on and so forth, until hopefully the entire planet
is that vibration.
And it speaks of our responsibility to be on the positive side with this development. Yeah, I'm not part of the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Alima, meaningful service.
Interesting, because we have to ask ourselves, who's defining meaningful service? Who's defining what's positive? Who's defining what's peaceful? You see, I think that we often, that definition changes for us. We can know that even in our own life, it's changed and evolved. But it's there's that prayer, not my will, but thy will. Not my will, but thy will. There's a term, and I don't recall it right now, but in Sufic terminology, there's a term for satisfaction, being satisfied. Rarely, I think, do we find ourselves in a place of feeling satisfied.
We're busy either living in the past or the future.
Yep. Grasping or clinging, which we know is the root of all suffering. Third patriarch of Zen, first few lines. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preference. To pit what one likes against one, what one dislikes is like living between heaven and hell. Is it the man? Great way is not difficult for those who have no preference. To pit what one likes against what one dislikes is like living between heaven and hell.
That if you thank God for the past, present, and whatever happens in the future, and leave it to God's will, that brings you contentment. And contentment is happiness. Contentment is happiness.
So then we're searching for happiness.
Well, satisfaction.
It's a constant evolving process. I love this. This is a teaching from the Buddhist tradition. And this is on the teachings of dependent origination in terms of happiness. And this is from the Pali Canon, and it says, the Buddha says, suffering leads to confidence. Confidence to rapture. Rapture to joy. joy to tranquility, tranquility to happiness, happiness to concentration, concentration to knowledge and vision of things as they truly are. The knowledge and vision of things as they truly are to repulsion. Repulsion to non-attachment. Non-attachment to deliverance. Deliverance to the extinction of passions. This important passage clearly indicates how suffering can lead to happiness and ultimately to sainthood. I wouldn't have any comments about that because that's a pretty, it does an interesting flip about midway in this teaching.
It reminds me of a poem I can't remember, it was by Sarah Teasdale. While I can look life in the eyes grown calm and very coldly wise, life will give me the truth and take it in return my youth. Mm-hmm. I think I'd almost rather be youthful than enlightened.
You would say that? You would rather?
At this point in my life, yeah.
Does that create suffering?
Being youthful?
No, being wanting that again.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd go for the enlightenment at this mm-hmm. point.
I think it seems like such a far off goal that it's hardly worth striving for sometimes.
I really believe it's possible.
The Buddha thinks so.
Yeah. I think it's possible. I think we actually are. It's the obscurations that prevent us from knowing that. We all have those, but that's where the breath work can help. That's why that people often say, I think they want complex practices, but there's nothing better than the purification breaths to help remove those obscurations at all the different levels, and the elemental breaths for balancing and invoking the elements. Really is a very profound teaching, and because it's something that everyone does, people often think that it's a very not a very sophisticated practice perhaps, but it's perhaps the most sophisticated.
It's easy to remember too.
Yeah, it is. Do it in a few minutes, but are there other comments or questions?
From Roger. Without suffering, we all might just be treading water, but to embrace suffering is a gift.
How many people can do it when they're in it is what I want to know. I mean, how many people really remember that? It would be really good if we can. But what my experience is, I find people really trying to avoid it. You know, they want the magic word or the magic potion of how to get out of the suffering.
Nobody's going to avoid it. Everybody I know has something really serious going on. If you just have to, I guess you have to embrace it. You have to go along with it. I mean, you don't have to like it, but you better go along with it, because everybody I've known lately has got really serious.
Just toss out the cause, and then you have no effect.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the power of the suffering is that there's an energy to it. And when we can mm-hmm. see that there's an energy to it, the suffering is an agent of transformation. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes has to get pretty bad before we do something. It's a call. It may be a call to prayer. It may be a call to act. It may be a call to, you know. And I actually don't know that the highest... See, I don't... I had this encounter with a student who's writing a paper, and the student was talking about the social impact of design, and they wanted to say that it can only create peace. Well, that's a lofty ideal, but the truth is there's not a lot of peace anywhere. So if it's also to draw awareness to the lack of peace, then that's also very good. Sometimes you have to create a pretty disturbing message for somebody to do something, just like the universe provides these opportunities for us to suffer so that we'll do something. Does that make sense?
Sometimes people are so stubborn they're not going to change.
Well, that is true. And then they get more and more and more into
it. It's pathetic.
It is pathetic. But we have to also pray, and that's what this...
We have to accept it and love it.
This is this teaching, is that our raising our vibration, our concentrating on the breath can help that.
It can help other people if you're trying to get through to try and help them.
Not with words.
No.
Words will never do it. Lectures will never do it. No one in this room likes to be told what to do, do you?
No.
Are any of our friends joining us on Skype, do you like to be told what to do?
Never. Amina said, "Oh goody, it hurts. I'm growing." I think that might have been from different... She said, "I like suggestions."
Yeah, when they're asked for, yeah.
That's another quote I just thought about. I don't remember anything. Let's see. Well, something I'm forgetting it, though. Darn. Oh, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still.
Right.
It's true, and it makes them even more convinced of their opinion. You see, so there's a... This is why this message... I was talking with Piramarsha Hadayat earlier this week, and I said, you know, I just more and more realize how profound the message of Vinayak Khan is, because it's not about religion, but it's about understanding and respecting the other, to try to change one's view, to see the other point of view, that the message is really about, it is so much about humanity. It's like a social movement in a way, you know, it's like a revolution. And it's still as timely as it was when it first came in the, you know, early 20s, 1910, I think, first. But it's a, if we could only, it's a culture. It's culture. And we learn ordinary ways of being. This is an extraordinary way of being. It's not ordinary. It's like you have to throw... I feel like you don't have to do anything. For me, there's no recipe book. We think there is. You know, this worked for that before, therefore it should work for this again. But there's not a... Where's the agility in that? Where's the mindfulness in that? Where's the moment-by-moment awareness of that?
That's where I think people who do think there's a recipe, like the Bible is a recipe. Well, that really leaves that the ever-living God. If you say it's all just in a book somewhere, even if it's just an icon's book, where's the creative force moving today?
Yeah. No, it's a living message. Yeah.
What you're saying about nobody likes to be told what to do, in that the when you set up an atmosphere, or when it's so much more respectful, and you know, I think it's really... I don't know, it really speaks to me. I mean, my experience is everyone is telling each other what to do all the time. And
that's a problem.
And it does, like I see it, I feel like I see it a lot, and it really does make people more entrenched and more entrenched, and it splits people up more and more.
And not only does it make people worse, but makes us worse too. The same vibration, whatever mm-hmm. our mind mm-hmm. is the mm-hmm. same. So.
And that, you know, I get engaged in it with mm-hmm. you know, family and things. And mm-hmm. it's a hard thing not to. I mean, for me, it's hard not to.
It really seems to be the case with politics these days. Not to get into that, but just an example of too many people trying to.
We have to grow up and understand them and accept them. And then they can be free to change. I tell myself.
Mm-hmm. You tell yourself.
Yeah, it's... I don't think that people ever... I don't know if you can ever really make a change. But, you know, it's like... You know, Notre Dame's having a big thing about the graduation because of Obama being spoke, you know, giving the speech, and these and I'm going to say idiots. They're making a big scene about that. They really are, because they don't like the idea that Obama's, you know, pro-choice and Catholics and non-Catholics. We just can't give it up. And they're doing demonstrations and they're ruining graduation. And I think that's... I think when people are so stiff-necked on certain things,
too bad anyone had to know about it. Just go ahead, speak, quit.
Yeah, but they could...
We can have discussions about these things after the class. Focus on the practice, please. Mm-hmm. I have to say that my teachers have always asked that we avoid conversations of politics when we're having our meditation classes.
Smart teacher.
Yeah. It's not the subject to be discussed. You see how we always have that tendency to want to go to the ordinary mind.
Mm-hmm.
There's a resistance somehow for allowing the consciousness to become elevated. I think there's fear in that. We think we'll lose ourselves, but we'll just become more of who we're intended to be. Go back to that initial practice, breathing in, pour upon us thy love and thy light, and holding, disclose to us thy divine light, and breathing out, use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth. Breathing in, pour upon me thy love and thy light, and holding, disclose to me thy divine light, and breathing out, use me for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. Pour upon me thy love and thy light. Disclose to me thy divine light. Use me for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses.